I hate myself for loving you. Don't hate yourself. Don't hate yourself. I don't even know where to begin what kind of weekend this actually was. It was a great weekend in many ways, and then it was a very sort of eye-opening, mind-boggling weekend in other ways. So, of course, I have to share that with you. I will be talking with Robert Bork Jr., the son of the former, amazing author, should have been a Supreme Court justice, but he got borked anyway. I'm going to be talking about the re-release of one of his father's books about, of all things, antitrust. And you know that fascinates me, particularly in light of what we're seeing with these tech oligarchs. But that's for later in the program. Over the weekend, one of the things that I did was I was unable to go to the honor flight homecoming, but boy, I heard great things about it. I had a friend who took her son there, and I just I'm so proud of the Patriots who show up to welcome back these men and women who served. Now we're looking more and more at Korean and Vietnam veterans, and very few World War II veterans have survived this long, but any veteran of the United States military deserves to be saluted and welcomed back, period. End of story. So I'm just glad that so many FTL listeners turned out for the event. And I did. I always get the word. I always get the, somebody will tell me if you did it or didn't do it. And I, I might have my sources. I'm kind of like the FBI. God, I'm nothing like the FBI. But on Saturday evening, I went down to a gala, you know, essentially a yearly fundraising gala for Heartbeat for Miami, which is, of course, a Christian crisis pregnancy center, which has been vandalized, you know, and over again for the last 15 years. This was their 15th anniversary. Antifa since the opinion of Roe v. Wade came out, and then subsequent when the opinion was verified and the Supreme Court overturned Roe, they've been vandalizing these Christian crisis pregnancy centers, and for the life of me, why? You know, there'll still be many, many abortions, and with the chemical abortions that are now the rage, there's going to be no shortage of abortions. Why is it that these Antifa and Jane's Revenge people aren't satisfied that maybe some women don't have to have abortions? They can be offered alternatives. Maybe some women didn't realize that there were alternatives. So why would you be so adamant that places that do crisis counseling and offer assistance to young pregnant women or single pregnant moms, why does it bother you that they exist? And it bothers them. First, they did a show, and the event was at Trump Doral. And so first there was, some sort of nonsense going on with them trying to get into the event. Now, Doral, Trump Doral is a beautiful, as all Trump properties are, and very well managed property. And there was plenty of security. And the expectation was that none of this was going to pan out for the protesters. And the event would be fine and not to worry. I happened to arrive late. Not late entirely, but later than I wanted to get there. There was just, a lot of rain and issues going from North Broward County down to Miami-Dade. So we got there in time to be seated for the dinner. We missed like the cocktail hour, which is fine. I don't drink cocktails, and I had to like kind of rush through the silent auction. We didn't have time to really look. And I went and sat down at my table, sat with lovely, lovely people. First and foremost, my friends Carrie and Josh were there. And they had a number of their friends and family there as well. So we were sitting at a great table. And my husband, when my husband can find someone to talk to at an event like that, I consider the event, a success. And he was sitting next to, I believe, the man's name was David. And they chatted it up the whole time. And they were both very happy about that. Then it turns out David's a conservative and probably listening to the show right now. Hi. But in the middle of, you know, just a couple of, I think an opening speaker got up to welcome everybody, some doofus, some garbage head comes roaring through the dining room. I think that he was accompanied by two females, but I couldn't really tell because he was just the obnoxious one. Tall, Antifa-looking young white male comes screaming through the middle and like right by my table because we were, you know, front and center, throwing cards in the air, just literally throwing hands full of business cards into the air. And the business cards insulted the Crisis Pregnancy Center and said there were more of them than there were women's health care facilities in America. Now, first and foremost, how stupid do you have to be to put that on a card and throw it up in the air, thinking that anybody who it lands on is going to believe that? There are plenty of abortion clinics in America. I know you like to call them women's health care centers, but they're not caring for anybody's health. They're terminating pregnancies. They're killing babies, okay? So cut the crap with the, there's so many, crisis pregnancy centers and there are so few health care centers for women. First and foremost, women and men can go to the same health care centers. The only time they need specialized health care is when a woman goes to an OBGYN, who, by the way, the purpose of an OBGYN is to deliver babies and keep mothers safe. Period. Okay? Do a pap smear, maybe a little, bone density exam after 50, and send you for your yearly mammogram. That's what OBGYNs are supposed to do. They're not supposed to be yanking babies out of the womb. But, hey, listen, if that's what they want to do, there are plenty of facilities in which they can do it. But a crisis pregnancy center, particularly one that's faith-based, is not a facilitator of, they're not merchants of death, they're merchants of life. And Miami, Heartbeat of Miami is such a great organization. Not only do they allow a mother to know there's options, allow a mother to hear a heartbeat or to see a sonogram, but afterwards they don't abandon that mother. That mother is cared for. That mother is able to use her boutique bucks and go shopping. If she needs diapers, they got diapers. If she needs, a bassinet, they've got that. They make it possible for young women who don't have any resources and think, therefore, they must abort their child. They make it possible for them to keep that child. And they do counseling and referrals, and they do all this really wonderful stuff at zero cost to the young woman. Zero. They don't pay anything because of people like you and me who donate. That's all. You know, I'm a recurring donor to Heartbeat of Miami every month. Comes out of my checking account. I don't even feel it or think about it. It's such a worthy cause, all right? And this guy's running through there screaming, it's a sham, it's fake. I don't even know what he was screaming because all I'm thinking is like, whoa, look at this jerk, you know? And everybody in there is obviously in there because they believe in the mission. So what are you doing? What kind of reception you think you're going to get? You think somebody's going to suddenly go, hey, he's right. We don't want to save babies. We don't want to help babies anymore. Come on, let's follow him. You know, maybe he'll take us to a Planned Parenthood, North Miami. I don't know. What did he think was going to happen? Well, what happened was the perfect answer to the problem of this, you know, muckraker Antifa dude got arrested, you know, and carted off in handcuffs. Bravo. You know, I'm grateful for the security. I'm grateful for the police officers that were there who restored order immediately. But I had to watch the director of Heartbeat for Miami, Marta, dissolve into tears because she does this out of the goodness of her heart. For the last 15 years, she has stood up on the side of life, and some piece of garbage, male, mind you, who really, what business is it of yours if a mother makes a decision to save the life in her womb? Who the hell are you to think you can disturb this event? Just saying. You know, isn't that what feminism was about? Like, we all got together and said, hey, we are tired of men telling us what to do with our bodies. Well, apparently this dude thinks he should be able to tell women what to do with their bodies. Not only their bodies, but the unborn child's bodies, half of whom will be women. I was just repulsed by what I saw. But again, it made me double down. And I don't know if Marta knows this or if someone will tell her after hearing the show or if she's listening. I don't know if she understands that really what that guy did was light a fire under all of us and remind us that the battle is not over. The overturning of Roe v. Wade was a step in the right direction, but the battle goes on for the unborn. And if you're not willing to get into the battle and support the people who are on the front lines of the battle, like Heartbeat for America, then get out of my way and stop throwing things and stop acting like a fool, all right? It's just so, it's the same story. The left is always trying to tell me what's allowed and what's not allowed, who can talk and what they can talk about. It's not the right that stifles ideas. It's not the right that says we can't have a debate about these issues. I'll debate anybody on abortion at any time, day or night, anywhere. Why? Because I understand both sides of the argument. I could probably make a better case for their side than they seem to be able to, but I am firm in my conviction. It's not a wishy-washy position. For me, it's not nebulous. It's not ever changing or ever evolving, whatever it is that Barack Obama used to say about such things. It is cast in spiritual stone. I believe that the unborn are living and we must protect them. That's it. Do I believe that mothers need to be protected? Absolutely. But the idea that elective abortions out of convenience or out of fear is comparable to a mother's life being in danger? Mm-mm. You're not going to sell that to me. Not even, Chrissy Teigen can sell that one to me. Anyway, I hope you are downloading our app. You should have it on your phone by now. You should have it on your laptop. You should have it everywhere you go so that you can always listen to the show. And you can always listen to the podcast. A new No Restraint podcast will drop this afternoon. It's actually a little bit about Great Britain. It's about the pomp and circumstance of the ceremonies, about King Charles. What kind of a king will he be? It's about Liz Truss, the new prime minister, a very unlikely person to be prime minister. And then it's about this whole biogenetic, bioenvironmental, bio blah, blah, blah that Joe Biden just signed an executive order of last week, because I've got, I can't say that on the air. I am trying to be bio-responsible with my conversation. Stay right where you are. I got to take a quick break and I will be back. So that's, that was just what I thought was an incredible experience. And I'm so glad that I you can turn anything that's supposed to disturb you into something positive. You just have to know how. Okay. And I hope that others, not just me, saw that as an opportunity to stand up for what we believe in. And instead of allowing that person to make you vacillate in your beliefs, these lunatic Antifa types, they solidify my beliefs. They make me confident that I'm on the right side of every single issue. And that's a great place to be. I don't know how many of you did watch the funeral. I mean, it was, just interesting to see all of the coverage, because when you come right down to it, there aren't any real prominent monarchies left, really. So, I just wonder if there isn't a part of us that really wants a king. You know, the Israelites they wanted a king. You know, they didn't want, a savior. They wanted a king. They always wanted a king. They were always asking for a king. They got Saul. And, you know what happens with kings, right? They become, obnoxious kings. And then you just, everything got micromanaged in this. It's like a 10-day event, and it just now ended, and there was, they just have to report on everything. There was a spider that crawled across the queen's coffin in the abbey. Oh, my God. Camilla said something to Kate about the cheeky Charlotte, and a lip reader picked it up. And it's a headline, you know. And Harry didn't sing the words to the national anthem, God Save the King. Oh, my God. And he was told only of passing 5 minutes before public. And he wasn't allowed to salute. And Meghan shreds a tear. And oh, my God. Gosh, it was like, oh, it's enough to make me never want to see a monarchy again. Really? Oh, dear. I mean, you just sometimes you just say to yourself, like, does anybody really believe this is still good? You know, all this pomp and circumstances. Look, I did in my No Restraint podcast this week, I talked about why the queen was so beloved, and I talked about how similar to Davidic monarchies Great Britain is. It was pretty much fashioned on Israel. And so I talk about that a little. I liked the queen mother. I don't care. You know, there was nothing about her that offended me. I think... I just don't watch it that carefully, but my God, you had no choice for the last week, you know, and then I got to sit and endure like lip reading experts telling me what the queen consort's lips are saying. And, you know, did this one cry and did this one laugh? And oh my God, if we don't talk about Meghan, you know, ooh, we got to talk about Meghan every single day, you know, golly. Tears for Her Majesty. The Duchess wipes her eye. What? I mean, she wiped away a tear. First and foremost, Meghan Markle is an actress. So I don't believe her tears. You know, what is she crying about? Apparently the Queen and all of the people were so distasteful to her and Harry, they moved to America. So come on, what are you crying about? Yeah, are you crying because of you? Your husband is now like almost out of the line of succession. You know, you don't have titles. Your kids aren't going to be called prince and princess. And, you know, by the way, they were in the second row for the funeral. You must know that, right? It's what amazes me, you know, that there is an interest in all of this. Apparently, Prime Minister Trudeau was singing a Bohemian Rhapsody at a London hotel just before the state funeral, drunk. So Justin Trudeau is not only a bad Prime Minister of Canada, he's also apparently not a very good singer. And probably pretty inappropriate. Easy come, easy go. Probably not a good line, you know, to be singing at a state funeral for the Queen. I think Canada is still like, you know, kind of part of Great Britain anyway. Just what is wrong with these men? Joe Biden, after he signs the guest book or whatever it was, makes his condolence speech. He turns to Jill, Dr. Jill, and says like, oh, where do we go now? Ugh. These are, you know, moments that I'd rather weren't covered by the media. But we had non-stop coverage. And like watching the people of Great Britain cry all along the parade route and all the rest of it really made me think, like, did they think she was going to live forever? I'm kind of like curious about that. Apparently they did. They thought that she would live to be like 500 or something. I don't know. Anyway. I've had enough of the Queen. I've had enough of Great Britain right now. That's why we left. What I have also had enough of is rising electric and gas bills. They're soaring under this administration. It's really crazy. Utility users who are already facing some of the highest bills in years, get ready. You're going to spend considerably more because natural gas prices are going up. They've more than quadrupled this year due to the supply deficit that was exacerbated by Russia-Ukraine conflict, and they're projected to stay that way for months. And people up north have to heat their houses. Down here, we have to, you know, refrigerate our houses and keep our lights on. So the supply shortage has significantly increased the cost of utilities. Yeah, yeah. Get ready, get ready, get ready. It's going to be a long, cold winter. Anyway, let me take a break, and when we come back, I'll be talking with Robert Bork Jr. about the re-release of one of his father's great books, and stay right where you are. I'll be right back. And welcome back. I have had the opportunity in the past to speak with Robert Bork Jr., who is the president of the Antitrust Education Project and also the son of one of my all-time heroes and author of books that I read and reread. You are like me, Robert. You reread your father's books all the time, I bet.
Well, yes, I do, actually. How did you know?
Because if you're an intelligent person and you're interested in things like antitrust, or you're interested in, slouching towards Gomorrah, at this point we're bobsledding towards Gomorrah, there are no better books, you know, so I'll reread them until one day maybe I can write a book on my own. But, you know, antitrust is such a fascinating subject, and your father really, in the antitrust paradox, did such a great job of explaining what it is and how different it is today, the way the courts actually view the role of government in private businesses. So could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Sure, absolutely. Well, first of all, before your listeners nod off, let me just say antitrust is the word that was coined back in the late 19th century because many big corporations like Standard Oil and the railroads were all organized into trusts. And they had accumulated a lot of market share, a lot of power, and these laws were anti-trust. Now, today, I think a better description that they can understand is competition law. Mm-hmm. But it still comes under the rubric of antitrust law. Anyway, my father had studied antitrust and was an antitrust lawyer in practice when he joined Yale Law School to become a professor. And he started really trying to figure out then, after, as an academic, what was wrong? He just felt there was something very much wrong with the law. It was a jumble of conflicting decisions that tended to raise prices and support inefficient firms to the detriment of consumers. And in the course of writing The Antitrust Paradox, which came out in 1978, he did a lot of math. He taught himself calculus, did a lot of math and economics, and basically coined the term the consumer welfare standard. He thought that the law really was meant to protect consumers, and that was a better principle than this jumble of judicial decisions interpreting the law. And it was a neutral principle and one that put the consumer at the center of everything and every decision related to enforcing antitrust.
Mm-hmm. You know, antitrust, like you said, is such a, the word itself is makes people fear. They're not really sure what it means, and they don't know how it affects their lives. You know, my son, who went to Yale Law School, when he entered in his freshman year and was, I guess they do a lot of testing and discussing with the deans and everyone else, they'll generally steer you into a track. And he got steered into antitrust, bankruptcy and antitrust at the time. And when he left law school, he went and became an antitrust lawyer for Warren Buffett, or actually for Charlie Munger of Munger, Tolles & Olson, Buffett's partner. And and when I asked him, because my son is really now he's like, an entertainment guy on television doing lawsuits for, TMZ and Harvey. But, at the time when he went out there, I said, why antitrust? Why did they steer you in this direction? He said, because you got to be smarter than the average bear and you have to care about consumers. And he said, and I'm both. He wasn't modest and he still isn't. but that's true. At the base of all of antitrust legislation, as confusing as the lawsuits may be, is this desire to make sure that we, the consumers, don't get ripped off all the time.
Right. The Exactly. So, and that what corporations are doing benefits the consumer in terms of price and innovation and job creation. And, you know, that's the goal of antitrust law. However, now we find ourselves in a very peculiar time where with the Democrats controlling both houses of Congress and the White House, they are, and the very, very, very progressive liberal strain of Democrats who call themselves neo-Brandeisians or hipsters. Brandeisian refers to a former Justice of the Supreme Court, Louis Brandeis.
Right.
They want to bring back his approach, which was big is bad. Everything big is bad. And that's not always the case. In fact, big is not against the law, and monopolies aren't against the law. It's what how you got them and what you do with them that can be they can violate the law. But you know, bigness, in fact, can create these economies of scale. It can create these what they call network effects, where the more people who are in creates more value to the product that they're selling, the service that they're selling, whether it's a platform like Facebook or you know, a platform like Amazon. So the law has to be interpreted, I think, as to what the relevant market is and whether or not there's abuse in that market. Mm-hmm. The left here wants to use antitrust law because it's a big weapon. It's a huge sledgehammer that can be used to extort corporations into doing things you want them to do, whether it's enforcing all sorts of woke standards, which is what this crowd wants to do, or to have more and more regulatory control over the economy to the point where it's going to be fossilized and, you know, it'll be difficult to have as much innovation and job creation. That's where we are and at that crossroads right now. And we have to fight to keep that from happening.
And I think the fact that that we do have these large platforms, you know, particularly in the tech world, you mentioned Facebook, it's Meta now. Yeah, I have a daughter-in-law who works for Meta. I mean, this is, people have no idea how far the tentacles of that Meta actually reach and how many different areas and how, you know, we're beginning to find out government is in direct communication with some of these giant corporations that are controlling speech and that are controlling, you know, even innovation. And people get nervous about such things because, you know, they get banned, they get doxxed, they, you know, all these terms that we never even knew about really do make us fearful of big. You know, so I'm glad you said that big's not always bad, but sometimes there is a purpose in breaking up a giant company. Wouldn't you say that certainly when it comes to energy, we're better off with multiple companies competing?
Sure. I mean, in principle, the more, you know, the more companies, not, I wouldn't say 100 companies, but, you know, more than two or three,
right,
is a better thing. But you know, there some industries are so capital intensive that you need to have a certain amount of size to be able to actually compete in that space,
like railroads.
But I do agree. The more, generally speaking, competitors you have, the more competition on price there's going to be.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, this idea of a global economy, and I don't think any of us, no matter how we feel about it, can deny that there is now an interplay between whether it's the European Union and the United States or even the Ukraine and Europe. There's all this commerce that happens, and it really, you know, you better have some scale or you're not going to be able to compete on this global level.
Exactly. And, you know, you're absolutely right. The China, for example, I mean, it's amazing when you order something or you go to the store, any store, when you find out where it actually came from. Not, you know, a lot of stuff comes from the United States, but a lot more stuff comes from, you know, your fruit and vegetables come from South America. Your flowers come from South America, things that you can't believe either they come from, they're made in China, or I know in this Ukraine conflict with Russia, we discovered, of course, that most of the world's fertilizer comes from Ukraine. So it's and wheat, huge.
Yeah, so, the breadbasket of Europe.
Good. Yeah, exactly. So it's important to have good, fair competition. But not to sort of swing the pendulum so far that the government is now controlling all the competition. You know, we don't want the big companies to be have a stranglehold on their competitors, but we also don't want the government to have a stranglehold on the economy either, right? Because they want to regulate everything.
This is true.
Have to balance all that stuff.
And the book, and you can read the book, you can still get the book, The Antitrust Paradox is the name of the book. I'm holding it in my hand, by Judge Robert Bork, only mine is a kind of an older version, The Policy at War with Itself. So this is a reissue.
Well, we put out a new version, April in 2021. You can get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
And it's got an introduction by Senator Mike Lee from Utah and a forward by me. And and it's very readable. And
all of his books are very readable. Let me just ask you a question before I let you go. You've just like every other American have watched the last three confirmation hearings for Supreme Court justices in Gorsuch and Kavanaugh and all of a sudden I forgot her name.
Amy Coney Barrett. Yes.
Right? And I mean, does it like? For me, watching the Kavanaugh hearings took me right back to the hearings with your dad. And all I kept thinking was, you know, we haven't come any very far at all. If anything, we're in worse condition now than we were then. I mean, the dynamics of the politics of a Supreme Court nominee, it must make you're sick to your stomach.
It does. Actually, you know, it's funny you should mention this now. Today, the 19th of September, is the 35th anniversary of the last day of his testimony in his confirmation hearing. Funny how I remember those days so well.
How did you forget?
And, so that was, I remember leaving the hearing room after the end of that day. And then, of course, on October 23rd, he was voted down. It's a horrible memory. I must say, my sympathies are for Brett Kavanaugh and his family, who are friends of mine. No one accused my father of being a rapist and a sex fiend. They only accused him of being a racist. So there you go.
he narrowly avoided the sex fiend thing. Okay.
Yeah, I know. that's all they've got. You know,
it's awful.
Say, when you don't have any facts, you pound the table, or you shout racist, it's horrible.
It's horrible.
I hope it gets better.
And when I think of all of the decisions that I would have loved to hear your father's opinion on, because much like Clarence Thomas and much like Antonin Scalia, they know how to write an opinion so that a non-lawyer could understand it. And for years there, they were all undecipherable opinions. And I would say, boy, you know, they eliminated Robert Bork, and I would have maybe understood this ruling if he was on the Supreme Court. So, you know, that at least is something you can hold on to. There are plenty of us who endured those hearings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, what made it so hard to understand what they were saying was they didn't know what they were talking about, and they were making it up. So, in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It's always a pleasure talking to you. The Antitrust Paradox, A Policy at War with Itself. It's a re-release of Robert Bork's book. Thanks so much, Robert Jr., for coming on.
Thank you. Anytime.
All right. You take care. When I think of what that family went through, because back then that was more than enough pain. Let me remind you, Dan Bongino is coming up at 1 o'clock, and 4 o'clock is Ben Shapiro. At 6 o'clock, the WPTV News, and Jen and Bill will be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. So I'm going to finish this segment. When I come back, stay right where you are. I saw a really awful study you know, that I'm going to do a little more research into about the suicide rate of veterans. And we've been talking about this forever. And at this point, it's really distressing me that we have not gotten a handle on it. You know, according to a new analysis that I saw on Saturday, I think it was just released, the suicide rate among veterans may be more than double what is actually being reported by federal officials. According to the Military Times, which I read, it says officials from America's Warrior Partnerships in a joint study with the University of Alabama and Duke University reviewed census death data from 2014 to 2018 for 8 states and found thousands of cases of suspected or confirmed suicides not included in federal calculations. Now, if you repeat those figures across the other states, it would push the veteran suicide rate from about 17 a day. That's the official estimate that the Department of Veterans Affairs gave us last year. It would move it from 17 a day to 44 a day. I mean, think about that for a second. How can we be such a great nation and 44 veterans are dying from suicide every single day in this country? I've got 2 million illegal immigrants crossing the border, and we're arguing over whether governors can fly them to blue states or whether Joe Biden can continue resettling them wherever he feels like resettling them. And we've got thousands of cases of confirmed suicides among our veteran population, and we can't seem to get the handle on that. But we'll accommodate all of these illegal aliens, right? Right? Does that make any sense to anybody in this audience? Does it? Because it doesn't make any sense to me. And look, this report wasn't put together to attack anybody, to attack the feds or to attack, you know, state laws, but to actually just point out areas where we have incomplete numbers and where we're overlooking the number of suicides among veterans in America. Now, we need to find a solution to the suicide problem. You know, it's the largest category of overlooked deaths. About 60% of the uncounted cases concern drug overdoses. And I got a border that's wide open with fentanyl pouring across it. And a lot of these deaths that are being called, you know, suicides are fatalities that may or may not have been deliberate. You know, there are people who are dropping dead of overdoses who may never have been, you know, drug users before, who may have had an occasional foray into taking some kind of drug. But it doesn't matter whether it's an accident or a suicide. These are preventable deaths. And part of the reason that we can't get a handle on this is because of the amount of fentanyl that's pouring into this country. I'm sick of it. You must be sick of it, too. You know, it's touched every single family that I know, one way or another. It has touched my community more often than I care to even, you know, think about. People that I have known and wives of husbands and mothers of children and husbands of wives who have died of these fentanyl overdoses, some of them, you know, most of them accidental. Why? Why are we not paying attention to this? You know, why when I sit on a board at like, you know, the South Florida Wellness Network, are we talking to men and women in law enforcement who haven't even been trained in using Narcan so that when they show up at these overdose sites, they don't even have the means to maybe reverse the overdose. I'm just so tired of it. I really am. And I live in a country that has all these natural resources that are being expended in every which way. I got to worry about the climate, but I can't keep veterans from killing themselves or 18-year-olds from overdosing on fentanyl. And you think I'm going to sit around here and worry about how many windmills we have? It's sickening. It really is. We need to get back on the right track. And that's why when people say to me, oh, but Joyce, you know, don't keep talking about Donald Trump. Can't we just make Donald Trump go away? God forbid Donald Trump goes away. That's all I'm going to say, because I don't believe there's anyone in America today who understands the depth of our problems and who's willing to basically do whatever it takes to fix them. And you know, these are desperate times, and I'm tired of it. I'm tired of waiting. I'm tired of watching Congress, conducting hearings on January 6th. I've had it. You could tell I'm frustrated, but that's okay. It's all right. You know, somebody has to stand up for the right things. So I thank you for your time this time until next time. And my plan is to be back here tomorrow at noon, if it be his will and he delays his coming. I'll be leaving for Washington, D.C. after my show tomorrow. I'll be broadcasting from there on Wednesday and Thursday this week. And so pray for me. You know, going into the swamp is not fun. May God bless you. May God bless the United States of America. And may God bless Donald Trump.